Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio. Also, Spotify, Deezer, Apple. We just got on CastBox, Radio.com, Radio Public. Tune in wherever you listen to us. It's the Dark Mark Show. I'm Dark Mark, the goth comedian. Thank you for listening. It's a special show.
It is a very special show.
Okay, I'm flipping the camera around. You hate this.
I hate this part.
That's my co-host, everybody's favorite vegan heavy metal DJ, Hannah Bach.
Hey, guys.
Yeah. Very special show because a couple reasons. First off, we know what a Freddy Krueger Nightmare on Elm Street fan you are.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. You've seen the Dream Warriors and Dream Master once or twice?
My favorites, yeah, more than once or twice.
Yeah, those are probably the best. And that's partly because of this guy right here. That's my new friend, which I met like about a month ago, and I keep doing shows at his bar, and I love hanging out with this guy. Turned out to be a really cool guy. Rodney Eastman.
Hey, thank you so much, Mark. Same to you, buddy.
Right. Yeah. And also, we've had AVN nominees.
Mm-hmm.
And you were a Saturn Award nominee. I don't want to discount
it. Am I really?
You were for some movie. I'll look it up. It was a movie you did a long time ago. But we've had AVN Award nominees. We've had Grammy nominees.
We have.
We've never had an Academy Award nominee.
Until tonight.
Until tonight. There he is. He's hiding from the camera. That's John Hawks, who I...
How you doing, folks?
I also met about a month ago. Heard these two sing in the Rodney and John Band. And we're going to hear some songs tonight. Turned out to be a super nice guy, John. As you might expect by seeing his movies, except for, you know, maybe Mary May, where you play a cult leader.
It's easy for you to say. Martha Marcy May Marlene,
which I haven't seen, but now I want to see it because that's like
great movie.
That's what I hear, and you're like, you know, like you kind of got the Morgan Freeman vibe. You always play kind of, even if they're kind of rough around the edges, nice guys.
Well, I should clear something up about the Academy Award nomination. It turns out it was a clerical mix-up.
Oh, no, it was not. I saw it.
Actually, yeah, it was in the news. It was buried.
You actually won and Christian Bale's got to give it back, right?
No. The nomination itself. No. That was a great experience. Winter's Bone was a dream to be part of. So.
And we're going to talk about that. Actually, thanks for... mentioning that because I got to talk about sponsors really quick. Audible. Audible is one of our sponsors. If you go to audibletrial.com/DMS, you get one book, any book you want, two Audible originals, and a 30-day trial to Audible. Winter's Bone, the book, is one of the audiobooks you can get.
That's fantastic.
Also, your co-star Miranda July has two books on Audible. Her short story collection, which I've read, is great. Mm. Apparently, she came out with a novel.
Mm-hmm.
So I might add that to my Audible collection. Also, you used to just get a book at a 30-day trial. Now you get two Audible originals.
It's amazing.
And the Audible originals are actually really cool. They have one with Kate McKinnon from Saturday Night Live. You guys like Kate McKinnon?
I
think she's great. I think she's
kidding me.
Yeah. I think she's the best performer they've had since Eddie Murphy. I think she's great. She has a whole fairy tale she wrote with her sister. They performed it. It's on Audible. That's an original. You can get that free and Winner's Bone or whatever you want. Or Alien 3. Not a great movie. But William Gibson, the cyberpunk writer, wrote a script that wasn't used. So they got Michael Biehn, Lance Henriksen, and the cast to act it out.
That's fantastic. Nice.
That's an Audible original. You can get that free. So
you're a great writer. I'd be, yeah.
Yeah, so you're like, what happened there? That might have been the movie that you've been waiting for. You can listen to it in your car. I always mess it up. Audibletrial.com/DMS.
Well, and you know, having a great writer write a screenplay. The problem with the screenplay was it was probably too good. Was probably the problem.
Well, Frank Darabont wrote Nightmare on Elm Street 3. I'm kind of an award winning writer.
Yeah.
Terrific. And you had like zero lines. So.
Well.
Am I wrong?
No, you are not wrong. But I had the most important line in the movie.
Shattered
Glass. At the end. That's right.
Yeah.
And we're going to play for you probably later tonight. And
you're gonna play Dream Warriors?
You will no.
Like the Hawkins?
But I'm gonna sing for you, and my voice can sometimes still shatter glass.
I've heard both of you sing. Yeah. I was listening to your old band on Spotify when I was driving down here.
I have to say, I feel like a lot of times the parts of movies that I really remember aren't when people are talking. anyway. That, the images seared in my mind are often a character driving or shaving or just sitting in a reflective moment. So yeah, I think words are overrated. Well, should we go home?
Or unzipping the dress of a fantastically sexy nurse,
or the waterbed thing.
I gotta see.
We're gonna talk about that. You've never seen Nightmare on Elm Street?
I've not seen.
What a friend.
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen Casablanca and Humphrey Bogart. Right. Never forgave me for that. So,
but I know for sure Rodney's saying me, you, and everyone we know because I put the colon and the whole thing. And
he's got the sticker on his guitar. Yeah. That was a final homage.
Back and forth forever.
Final homage.
Back and forth forever. It's already going crazy. Hannah, before we start actually talking, because everybody's talking already.
The show hasn't really begun. Right?
Tell us about our other sponsor because they might want to know about that.
Doomy's Home Cooking. They have a Nex-Mex, the best voted number one nachos in Los Angeles last year.
The and only one vegan. Without meat. They're all vegan.
And they're all vegan. They also have... another shop where you can get burgers and you can get a vegan Big Mac, a shrimp po' boy, which is one of Mark's favorites.
1253 Vine Street.
Yeah, and now they're having root beer floats for summer.
Wait, they have vegan root beer floats?
They do, yeah.
Yeah, you know where the M Bar used to be on Fountain and Vine? 1253 Vine Street.
That's a block from my house.
Go to Doomy's Home Cooking, tell them I said hi.
They're open to 3 a.m.
Open till 3 a.m. Okay. So if you're at the bars, which I tend to be, then just don't go to Denny's. Don't go to IHOP. Get some vegan junk food.
It's enough to take home, and it's going to make you happy. I mean, you can get even the vegan
chili cheese fries,
animal style.
Yeah, animal style without the animal.
They have the best jalapeno poppers.
What's the name of this joint?
Doomy's
Home Cooking.
Doomy's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, I know. It's
like,
right.
Like Doom, like Harbinger of Doom. D-O-O-M-I-E-S.
Yeah. I know exactly where it is. It's right next door to another business,
Creamy.
Which I won't name because they're not a sponsor. And I just have to say, the only bar I really go to, other than Five Star Bar, where we have the comedy show, is... it is the bar at our apartment. We have an apartment bar.
Nice. Which I've never been invited to.
Well, one day.
Yeah.
Play your cards right, Mark.
Yeah. You have a waterbed?
Not yet, but if you're coming over, we might get one.
Oh, if it's the same waterbed from Nightmare 4, I'm there.
And I also got to say, I love you, and please don't hate me. I'm a staunch meat eater, and the closest I ever really get to vegan cuisine is... a few years ago, I worked as a delivery driver for Flore on down on Sunset in Silver Lake. So. Mm.
No, but this place is not like the other vegan restaurants. Chicken Parmesan, pulled pork. It's fantastic. They got one in Hollywood. They got one in Culver City, one in Toronto, Canada. Trust me, if I slid you some Doomy's right now, you would have no idea it was vegan.
I got to try it out. I'm going to try it out.
All my meat eater friends at the bar, they're like, it's closing time. You want to go to Doomy's?
Nice.
They have great carrot cake. You can take that home.
Yeah, because you don't want, carnivorous carrot cake. Carrot cake would be tar. No.
Now, first I like my carrot cake topped with hamburger, personally, but that's just me.
It's huge carrot cake. It's a really big piece of carrot cake. They got deep fried Oreos, all this stuff. Anyway, I've got the camera on John, so... Mm. I'm going to be like Spielberg and all the other great directors that have directed you now. Now, here's the thing. Now, first off, I want to thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
Because every interview I've ever seen that you've given, you say you hate interviews. So I appreciate you coming here and being interviewed by me. We'll try to make it as painless as possible.
Right. And I don't say every interview. Yeah. And I'm aware that I chose to be here. It's just, maybe this is fun.
No, this is going to be fun. This is going to be fun, yeah.
Certain other interviews aren't so fun, I guess. And that's okay, too.
But the reason you give is do you want to maintain your anonymity?
Yeah.
Sort of. You don't want to, even though your star has risen, especially in the last 5-7 years, you can walk around town. Nobody
much bothers me. And I appreciate that you've done the fuzzing of my face for all of this, the kind of taking out and also covered my voice. I'm an actress who you may not know.
But you must have people. This is what I'm getting at. You must have people that like stare at you. They're like, I know that guy.
Well, I get recognized, I guess, yeah, a fair amount. And then other people, you know, they, it's like, a deal like this.
Passed,
it's,
like,
look,
oh,
at you,
yeah,
look at the,
yeah,
phone, look at you, look at the phone.
Right, right.
The phone. Yeah, the phone changed everything. So you can just say your name now and people can look it up.
Except for you, because
following
you
around and saying, weren't you in,
right,
Godfather 5? And I was like, no, no. Wasn't in that one, but let's keep trying. Yeah.
But as far as I know, and see, let me correct me if it's changed. You don't have a smartphone. You don't have a computer. You don't have email.
I have a computer.
Okay.
I have no smartphone. I have running water and electricity.
Nice.
Indoor plumbing. That's new.
That's good.
That's new for me. Brand new. Just brought that in, and I've got a vehicle, which is good. Runs on gasoline and battery.
Well, speaking
they call
of
it a hybrid. What else can I tell you?
But
no,
I'm
definitely stuck in the 20th century, I would say, somewhat. I'm living in this world as well. But it's nice back there.
Mm. That actually brings me to a question I was going to ask you later, but I'll ask it now. Because you were in Lincoln with Daniel Day-Lewis.
Indeed, yeah.
And was he really like, you got to call me President Lincoln?
Yeah, yeah. That I'd heard that weeks in advance, and I thought it was great. I'm such a huge fan of,
like,
his.
Did he use an outhouse? Did he, like, you know, did...
I was told, and I don't want to talk out of school, I don't know for sure, I was told that he had his heating shut off in his house, and we were shooting in the winter in Richmond, Virginia. That's cold. I was told that he didn't sleep much. Lincoln didn't. I was told that he got up at 4 or 5 and chopped wood, rode around on a horse.
Wow.
Didn't seem weird to me at all, I have to say, Mark. It was more... Yeah, I didn't meet Daniel Day-Lewis during the shoot. But I got to meet Abraham Lincoln, and being a huge fan of Abraham Lincoln since I was a child, it was thrilling to be near him in that way, and you could just talk to him as though he was the president. Now, David Strathairn, wonderful actor who played Mr. Seward, when I had dinner with him one night, I said, how's it going with Daniel? And he said, well, last week, you know, we hadn't been shooting very long, but last week at one point, you know, an actor sometimes has really uncomfortable shoes, and if they're not going to be on camera, they might flip into some tennis shoes,
right?
Which David had done, and Daniel, while they were shooting the scene, kept kind of looking down, and all he said afterwards was, "Interesting choice of footwear, Mr. Seward." and he went and changed shoes and put them back on for the rest of the thing. But no, there was nothing weird about him or really compulsive about it. It just felt normal, and it was really. I admire him so much. So
it's a great performance.
Whatever he wants to do to get into character is fine with me, man.
Yeah.
It was great. I only worked one day with him, but that's really why I did the movie, Mr. Spielberg notwithstanding. But also amazing, of course. But yeah, the real thrill was to get to spend a day with Daniel Day-Lewis. And originally I was asleep through the scene and talked to Tony Kushner, the amazing writer of the script, great playwright, great writer. And
so wait, they hired you to sleep.
Well, it wasn't like that in the script I'd originally got, and I didn't talk much to him about it. I didn't whinge or complain, but I got to be awake in the scene and actually exchange lines with the president. So that was great.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because I was going to say, that's not really your technique. However, I did, actually just this week in research, I saw your acclaimed Independent Spirit Award winning performance in The Sessions.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Which is a great movie. You saw that, Rodney?
Of course.
It was great. And you, and correct me if I'm wrong, have you seen The Sessions?
I have not.
So that's another one that I would recommend. Very,
okay.
Very good movie.
I'll watch that this weekend.
Yeah, I can't believe I hadn't seen it before with all the nudity in it. But John plays a poet who has polio. Hmm. And I you know, I think I avoid this because it probably hit too home. Hmm. Is that this is a guy who really has so many beautiful women around him, but he's physically challenged. And then, you know, obviously he had polio. Now, you put a ball under your back.
Yeah. You know, there's a line in the script where Helen Hunt's character is dictating, speaking about having met with my character, Mark O'Brien, and she says, the curvature of his spine may make intercourse impossible.
Right.
Wow.
And so you can't really just disregard that as an actor. I mean,
yeah.
These are great clues about how to play your character. So I devised just a real hard piece of foam about the size of a soccer ball to lay under the side of it's a real character, Mark O'Brien.
Mark
passed
Brian, yeah.
away by now, but was a poet and an amazing human being. Wrote a really interesting book called How I Became a Human Being. That's a really wonderful one. A lot of clues there as to how to portray him as well. But he, right. Yeah, so that just made me lie in a very awkward, uncomfortable position in order to approximate, you know, what he was.
Now, did I read correctly that your organs were going out of alignment?
Wow, you're quite a researcher.
Something you both have in common.
Yeah.
I had a chiropractor that I'd been seeing throughout, and he was telling me, yeah, that my organs were shifting in my body a little bit, but I'm still here. I feel fine. Occasional pain, but you know.
I mean, you know, are the organs back to where they're supposed to be?
I don't know. I don't really, you know. You know, back in the last century, we didn't go to the doctor as much. Yeah. So
Had Helen Hunt on top of you. Is that all? You're okay with that?
With what?
Helen Hunt was on top of you. That
was fine. I toughed through it.
Yeah. Well, but here's the thing, Dom. I want an honest answer. You were nominated for, you won the Independent Spirit Award, nominated for the Golden Globe, Screen Actors Guild, Critics' Choice, every award, and you did not get an Oscar nomination.
That's true.
Were you disappointed?
Here's the funny thing. After Winter's Bone, it's going to sound really ungrateful, but my goal as an actor was never to, you know, to try to win awards or whatever, but you get sucked into that and your life changes. And so at the first Academy Awards, I said to my girlfriend, longtime girlfriend at the time, when it finished, I hope that never happens again.
And really?
Yeah. I think I'd be better with it now, but I was pretty unprepared for the amount of attention, I guess, that you get in that instance.
But even after 30 years
TMZ of, and things like that, well, no, I...
Of acting, yeah. It's validation that...
No, believe me, the greatest thing was to be in that room with a bunch of extraordinary artists, and there were people I admired that I got to meet that night. That was all really great. At the time, I just felt like that's plenty. I just kind of want to live my life, and I kind of got what I asked for.
So when every critic's like, he's a lock.
Yeah, that was hard part as well. Was from January when the sessions aired at Sundance to have every interview begin with, "Are you preparing your speech? Are you ready to go?"
for
a year, literally. Yeah.
And then you're like, well, thank goodness that didn't happen.
No, I was bummed, to be honest. Yeah. It's funny how we change, but yeah, I was bummed.
Okay, that's an honest answer. But you did win the Independent Spirit Award. That's not too shabby.
No,
that was two of those now.
Yeah, two. Yes.
Yeah, because you won one for Winter's Bone. We're gonna get back to that. And my personal favorite movie of yours, Me, You, and Everyone We Know, and other things. But before we get to Rodney, because Rodney's being very patient. When people get recognize you on the street, I'm assuming it's mostly for Deadwood and Eastbound and Down, correct?
Well, it depends on the person, but Deadwood has been something people have really not let go for 13 years until now, I guess. But that was people love that show. So wherever I was,
now I've seen some reactions to the movie. Like, come on, let's do this one over. Yeah.
I'd like to keep going, but I don't think that'll happen.
And we'll get to Rodney in a second, but it's Deadwood talk. Deadwood fans don't want to hear this. The show ended, I think, prematurely. I think a lot of people wanted it to go. Great cast.
Yeah, it was kind of canceled after the third season unexpectedly, so it didn't have an ending. Yeah.
Right. So and they kept saying for 10 years, the movie's coming, the movie's coming. How did that come about?
I don't know, incantations. There might have been some spells cast. I don't know what happened. Right. I think... You know, a script finally really came that HBO would get behind. David Milch is an amazing writer, probably one of the best writers I've ever encountered. But he doesn't work fast, and so you know, it took a while for him to get something that he liked and they liked, I think.
Right.
And then we were able to start clearing schedules and go forward. And somehow,
that's the thing. Yeah,
4 or 25 actors came back, and a lot of the crew. It was great.
Right.
Great.
So I think the gripe that I haven't seen the movie yet, but the gripe I hear is that Swearingen doesn't swear enough.
Oh, wow. He probably swears a fair amount.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I don't know how much you swore in the movie, but...
I never really swore a lot on the show. I kind of played more of a kinder man, but I swear a bit. You know, he's tough enough.
Right.
The movie's incredible.
I guess, I got to check it out. I definitely look forward to it. Yeah, just having an
amazing.
Because I've been going to the 5-star bar and doing comedy and hanging out with you guys and opening for you guys. This is Rodney. I got Rodney right here.
Hey, Mark.
Now, Rodney, you've been I don't want to discount. You've been a working actor this whole time as well, and you keep coming up with. I mean, you're like a horror legend. Not only are you Nightmare on Elm Street 3, you're a dream warrior.
I am a dream warrior.
When Dokken was streaming about the Dream Warriors, this is who he was talking about. Mm-hmm. You were in the Dream Master a little bit.
Long enough.
And, you know, you've been on Melrose Place, you've been on Charles in Charge, you've been on all sorts of things. I Spit on Your Grave, the remake, which Hannah is very, loves that one.
I mean, your character, like, I mean, I've watched that several times before I knew it was actually you.
You have
two
problems.
And two together. I actually threw some things at the TV. I was cussing at your character. I mean, you did your job. I mean,
you
brought out anger in me when I was just watching the film. You did. You're fantastic.
I gotta see that again.
Oh yeah. I mean, just
have you seen
that thing?
I Spit on Your Grave, John.
I have not.
No. See Nightmare first. Yeah. But
so I Spit on Your Grave.
The remake.
The remake.
Mm-hmm.
When I actually got offered that movie, didn't have to audition, and it was the title of the script I got was Day of the Woman, which was the original title for
the original I Spit on Your
for
Grave.
The original I Spit on Your Grave, and it's really interesting the subject matter of that movie, even. Today it's held up by women's rights proponents as like a real sort of a real example of early power of women, you know, taking control. And so I got sent the script. I read it. I thought it was really dark, but really incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And my neighbor, I went next door and I was saying, oh, I think I'm going to do this movie. It's called Day of the Women. And I described the plot. And he was like, isn't that I Spit on Your Grave? I was like, no, it's called Day of the Woman.
Yeah.
And I went and met with the director, and I still didn't know, and found out that it was a remake. And
apparently, they kept the page with the spitting away from you. So,
I think it was to sort of keep the remake nature of it under the radar.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Anchor Bay made the movie.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you could say, you're a horror legend. Yeah. I've only done 3 horror movies ever in my life.
Well, those are 3 big ones.
Nightmare 3, Nightmare 4, and the remake of I Spit on Your Grave.
Those are 3 of Hannah's favorites.
And that movie was one of the greatest acting experiences I've ever had in my life.
I was going to ask you, what does it take to prepare to play a role like that?
Well, it's so dark.
Mm-hmm.
It's so out there. And
Now, you play a rapist, am I correct?
Well, I mean, you never see me rape, but right. Yes, yeah, I play a rapist. I play a redneck.
All right,
kind of like a ringleader.
No.
A little bit.
No, I'm a follower in that movie. Mm-hmm. I think, but that was, it was really interesting. It was the kind of script where, especially our director, really wanted to make it real. And the movie never got much traction in the theaters because everybody at the time was saying, you can't remake this movie today.
Well, there's a lot of remakes at the time, too, and people were getting burned out of them, too.
But it was also the subject matter. They were saying, this movie was so edgy in the original that there's no way you could make it today.
Well, let me ask you, since you know, we've got 3 great actors sitting here, me, you, and John.
and everyone we know.
Yeah, exactly. How do you, I mean, are there times, I mean, you're a decent human being, and you're called upon to do.
Don't be so quick, Mark.
All right, well, I don't know you that well, but you're a decent human being. to do these things, I mean, does the director have to push you forward, or does he have to pull you back and say, whoa, 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 wait a second. Mm. Like, how far into it did you get?
I think everybody...
How method did you get?
Everybody knew at the beginning of shooting, our director was very clear that he wanted to make it real.
Right.
I think it's an amazing movie. I think it's such a well-directed, such a tight, great movie. It's one of the few... I hate remakes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it's one of the few remakes that might be, no disrespect, better than the original.
I agree.
And it was the subject matter that it dealt with,
right?
Which is, if for those fans who don't know,
yes,
of your show, it's about basically a gang rape,
yeah,
and revenge on the men who commit that act.
Right.
There was no way that you could fake that. There was no way that you could just go halfway with that kind of performance.
Right.
To make it real, to make it believable, to make it visceral,
right,
and frightening and disgusting.
Now when you go in,
you had to really had to really go there.
Yeah.
And we shot that in Shreveport, Louisiana.
Yeah.
And we're at like a day's end in the middle of nowhere.
I've been to Shreveport.
Right. Yeah. So you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The only good thing about Shreveport is that you could drive through at the liquor store and buy a daiquiri to go.
No, I've done that. Yeah, I used to live in New Orleans. That's what's great about it.
Not on Sundays.
But not on Sundays.
Monday, Saturdays. You can't get Chick-fil-A. You can't get a drive-thru daiquiri on Sundays. But did you feel gross when you came home? Did you feel like icky?
I didn't.
No, okay.
No, because if we were in such an isolated location to begin with.
Right.
There were five of us all engaged in the same act of storytelling.
Right.
You could not fake it. You had to go there 100%. I think kind of like John was talking about, I won't compare the movies,
right,
but much like Daniel Day-Lewis,
right,
he really had to go there. He had really had to go for it.
Right.
Much like John with the ball in his back.
Sure.
You couldn't go halfway with that.
Absolutely.
And it was super traumatic.
Yeah.
And we pretty much shot the film in sequence.
Yeah, that's...
So it was super traumatic. It was super traumatic.
Well, you'd have to kind of do that, though.
But yeah, that ended up bonding all of the actors,
right,
together.
Right.
It made it one of the... It's so... I'm getting chills. It's one of the weirdest things to say.
Stay away from Hannah.
That one of the hardest subject matters...
Hannah Morgan, I got you guys.
One of the hardest subject matters to deal with,
right,
ended up bonding the group of actors that were all there doing it together,
right, mm-hmm,
in a way that I don't think I've ever experienced in anything I've ever worked on.
Right. And
I got to say, I'm really surprised that movie is
even a nightmare, because you... Even a dream.
I was 18.
Yeah, you're a kid.
I mean, I was a kid.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about that. And actually, a lot of people don't know that Daniel Day-Lewis was the original choice for I Spit on Your Grave, but you got the role instead. So I was going to say, Now, John. Now, your real name is not Hawks.
It's not. No.
I had it on the tip of my tongue. I've been looking at it all week. It's I don't know what it is.
Hawks.
It's not Hawks.
Perkins.
Perkins. Perkins. Oh, God. I always do this. I flooded myself with so much John Hawks, Rodney Eastman information this week. Now, how did you get Hawks?
I joined. When I became a professional actor in 1986, I joined the Actors Equity Union in San Francisco, where I'd been flown to do a play.
Right.
Very exciting. Everything was great. We were rehearsing for a couple of weeks, and the publicist for the play came in and said, I just spoke with the Actors Equity representative. That's the union for live stage actors. And he told me that there's already a John Perkins. And I said, oh, that's interesting. And she said, well, it's not good, because there can't be two John Travoltas, could there?
Right.
I said, no, I guess there couldn't be. So she said, I said, well, what's that other guy going to do? And she said, no, you're going to have to change your name, and we're printing the programs in a couple hours, so get back to me. So I called my Aunt Aggie in San Mateo, rest in peace, Aunt Agnes, and she listed a bunch of family names, and this one turned out to be a married in one, but I like the sound of it.
Yeah.
And eventually, through difficulties with the IRS and the Social Security Administration being confused as to why I was being paid under two different names often and one Social Security number, I made things easier in 1990 and changed my name permanently to John Hawks.
Okay.
My mother at the time said she was fine with that, but if I ever won an Academy Award, she'd change her name to Hawks, she said.
Oh, okay.
But she never had to, so.
Damn that so Christian far. Bale. So anyway, I'm sorry I keep saying that. But,
oh, that doesn't matter. He's a fine actor. Yeah.
No, no, it's your performance of Winner's Bone. Now, when I first, and this is when I went up to you and fanboyed out and embarrassed myself. Mm-hmm. When I saw you guys perform at the Five Star Bar, and you guys are great, and we're going to hear some music later. Because one of my favorite movies, probably, and I loaned Hannah a DVD. I wanted her to watch
it
with Grandpa.
Watch it tonight, yeah.
See what you think. One of my favorite movies, probably top 20 favorite movies of all time, Me, You, and Everyone We Know. Mm. And that's when I first noticed you. Now, I've seen you in Perfect Storm, From Dusk Till Dawn. A lot of people recognize you from that. Just all sorts of movies. This was kind of a lead. And it's such an it's what I really take from the movie, and I watched it a couple weeks ago. It's a bunch of very eccentric people that are all relatable.
Mm-hmm. It's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, yeah. It's so hard to describe the movie.
It is.
That's the thing. You like just see it. Trust me, you'll love it.
Yeah, that movie has got a lot of I think play internationally as well. I was in Ireland two summers ago and in a guitar store, and one of the employees, very kind man, but took about 5 minutes on the edge of tears, telling me how that movie had saved his life, and so that he'd watched it over and over through a difficult part in his life, and you know stuff like that. That's really cool, and a movie that can travel. You know, it's a rare thing. It can kind of play in a lot of different cultures. Somehow, even though it's such an oddball film.
It's an odd movie. Miranda Dry starred in it,
wrote it, directed it,
mm-hmm. and a genius.
Yeah, it was her first film. She'd done a lot of performance art in the Pacific Northwest, and she'd, I think her start with this was writing a script, submitting it to the Sundance Film Lab, and being chosen. And I wasn't part of that film lab. I've been there for other projects over the years, but that's kind of where that one got the wheels turning.
And how'd they get you?
She was interested because Michelle Satter, who runs the Sundance Lab, really thought I'd be great for the part. And Miranda, I don't know if she was convinced by any means, but I went and read for her, and Gina Kwan, the producer, and it was a super emotional kind of session. That one kind of went back and forth.
How so?
Oh, it's an emotional work, an emotional scene, and I loved the script so much when I read it. I really, really, really wanted the role badly.
Yeah.
And I was trying to have to kind of hold myself together through the whole process to not be desperate or weird over the whole thing. But, you know, the character is a little desperate and weird, Richard Swerzy.
Yeah.
But
As every character in the movie.
Pretty much.
As is everybody in real life.
That's true. And so that one was, I ended up inconsolable when it looked like I wouldn't be able to be in the film because I was still working on Deadwood and I'd gotten another small movie that I couldn't, didn't have a big part, but I said I would do it. And so it was hard to walk away from, but somehow it ended up all working out and I'm really glad it did.
And I remember going to see it with my girlfriend in the theater and we heard all the, you know, it's a critically acclaimed. We're like, yeah, go check it out. Mm-hmm. About 15 minutes, we both looked at each other like, this is so much better than we thought.
Oh, good, good. I don't know that, you know, no one loves or hates, no piece of art or human being is loved or hated by everyone, but that one's probably not for everybody, but for those who it's for, I think it's really great. It's really amazing for someone who can take that trip.
And she worked at the Gord House and we took the walk. Mm-hmm. It was a whole thing anyway.
Yeah.
But that's when I first noticed you, and I was like, oh, he's the American Gangster, he's in that. He's in Miami Vice. He's in every movie like you pop up in.
Oh yeah. Well, I was
Donnie Darko's sequel. You're playing the motel manager. I'm like, what the
Why
the hell would he even take this?
Well, that was friends involved, you know. Yeah, I don't know how the film came out because I never saw it, but
it's actually not that bad. It's not as good as Donnie Darko, obviously, but it's not bad. No.
Yeah. It's a remake, and I kind of feel how Rodney does about remakes generally. So,
it was a sequel, wasn't it? It was a loose sequel. The little girl and Donnie Darko.
I haven't seen the original either.
Grew up and
got you.
There's a couple twists and turns. It's not great, but it's not bad.
Cool.
I mean, you know, it's just go see it for the motel manager. But
I'll check it out. What's it called again?
It's Estarco. Anyway.
So you did a lot of TV shows, I noticed, too. And you starred in one that was a staple in my growing up, because I'm from Alaska, which was Northern Exposure.
Oh,
do you remember that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that was...
Do you remember that when he was in that?
That's really
cool.
No,
but I was trying to go back to find it.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I couldn't find it.
Character. You know, I'd been... that was a great Hollywood lesson in that I wasn't watching a ton of television, but I remember I didn't have cable, and I was living in Hollywood in 1990, and I heard that show was good, and I didn't always trust when large groups of people liked something, but I watched it, and I was nearly banging the side of my TV going, this is free? I don't know if this is amazing. I mean, mm-hmm. at the time,
right.
there weren't so many really smart shows like that going on. It was funny and heartwarming, and the stories and the characters were well-drawn and amazing. Mm-hmm. So I went and auditioned for a hotel clerk and didn't get the part, and I was really bummed. And this is how life works. I think it was a month later they called me back in to read for kind of, you know, one of the two real leads of the episode, playing mm-hmm. a health inspector, and got that part. And if I'd gotten the, you know, desk clerk part, I was so pissed off about it, I never would have gotten the really cool part.
And then you finally in that star, you played a hotel desk clerk. So there you go.
I finally got to live my dream.
Was that the first like major TV show that you were on?
Let me see. It certainly was the first time I got to play a character that felt like a human being to me. I'd done some sitcoms that are probably mostly forgotten. But yeah, that was the first time I really got to play someone who felt like a live person that I could sink my teeth into. Yeah. And really, really, and the writing's so good. So that was helpful.
That's great.
Because she lived under this poster.
I was wondering where you were from as I listened to you speak. So you're from Alaska. That's awesome.
Little island, Ketchikan. Oh, yeah. Cool. So everybody up there watched that.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
And you know what else everybody watched? The Dream Warriors.
That's true.
This guy.
Drum roll.
Now, this was your... Now, I was going to ask you, were you in Tiger Beat and, like, teen magazines?
I was.
I thought you might have been.
Yeah, I was.
How was that?
I don't know. I mean, that happened when I was, you know, barely out of high school. And, I mean, how is anyone at 18 and 19 years old?
I wouldn't have minded being in Tiger Beat. Come on.
Sure. I wouldn't mind being in Tiger Beat now, although that would be a little creepy. But
well, Tiger Beat's creepy. And by the way, our young fans that don't know what we're talking about.
Throwback Tiger Beat.
They used to have 16. Magazines where
Isn't
they had
it still
young
out,
boys.
Honestly, one of those?
I don't know if they're going out of business, but basically it was a magazine for teenage girls and pedophiles, which had...
Never mind, go on.
Which had pictures of the cute, hot young men at the time, and you were one of them.
I was, and I actually only have one saved ever. I think it was the 1991 episode issue.
Yeah,
can't remember the month of YM magazine, and I was listed as one of the 50 most eligible bachelors.
Ah. In Hollywood.
In the world.
In the world.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The only person who had a bigger picture than me was JFK Jr. So,
wow.
So that was...
And look what happened to him.
That was pretty good for the ego.
And JFK Jr.
But yeah, not to get too philosophical about it, but, you know, when all that was happening, I was 18, 19, you know, 20 years old.
So you must have been going wild.
I wasn't, because it wasn't the same way that society is now. There was no TMZ culture. Even
well, that's better.
Now,
were you were in Hollywood?
I lived in Hollywood
in the 80s.
I grew up in East LA. In the 80s, I was living in East LA.
Okay.
I had no connection to the business. I just got lucky. I did.
How did you start acting?
Well, I always wanted to be an actor.
Right.
But then once I was like a sophomore in high school, I thought that's an impossible goal. I had no connection to the industry.
Mm-hmm.
But a friend of my mom's...
And don't worry about them. Just go ahead.
No, I'm not worried about... Not at all.
Yeah.
I grew up in East LA. I'm not worried at all.
Exactly. We're bringing you back to East LA.
Right. It's like old home week.
Yeah, all the cholos are out there just going wild. You'll hear some firecrackers in a second.
So a friend of my mom's... was involved in the business in some sideways kind of way.
Right.
And his friend was the first AD on a ABC after school special called Have You Tried Talking to Patty?
Right.
Which, oddly enough, was starring Heather Langenkamp.
Wow.
Nancy from Nightmare.
Right.
And also Mark Patton, who was the male lead of Nightmare on Elm Street 2.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Which is...
The homoerotic one.
Which is widely considered the gay Nightmare on Elm Street.
Right, right. It's homoerotic, yes.
Right. And he actually has... He's just made a film called My Nightmare that's screening for Outfest at MoCA on July 21st.
Oh, I'm going to check that out.
So...
Hannah, let's go.
I had always wanted to be an actor. I was working at a Arco gas station at the time.
Okay.
I was 18.
Right.
And they needed extras that could look like high school students. When I was 18 years old, I looked like I was 14, maybe 13. I was a late bloomer.
Right.
And so they needed us for two weeks.
See, now you look like you're 18, but...
you're too kind. So they needed us for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So I just sat on set, and because I was young and cute, and because I had a connection to the first AD, they would always push me to the front of the crowd scenes.
Okay.
So I got to watch the actors every single day. And after, you know, when I wanted to be an actor ever since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And then it seemed like an impossible dream. And then all of a sudden I was an actor. I was an extra on a set.
Right.
And I just watched the actors every day, and I went, that's acting? I could do that.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And then...
That's what John said when he saw Daniel Day-Lewis. He's like, anybody can do that.
And so, yeah, very soon after, I got into an acting class, and 6 months later, got an interview with an agent. And the first job I ever auditioned for, I got the part and got into the Screen Actors Guild.
And that's Nightmare on Elm Street 3.
No. That was Children of Times Square, directed by a great director, Curtis Hanson.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Directed L.A. Confidential, yeah. Eight Mile. Yeah.
Right. His first big job, a miniseries on ABC. And then I didn't get a job for 10 months after that.
That kind of happens.
And I thought, well, that's cool. I've been on TV. You know, I gave it a shot. Yeah. And then I all of a sudden got a part on a really bad courtroom show called The Judge.
I don't remember that.
Which was before actual People's Court or anything like that.
Right.
And that, you know, kind of reinforced my confidence. And the next week I got a call to audition for Nightmare 3.
All right. Now we're kind of talking about now. Yeah. Hannah, go ahead. What were your Nightmare on Elm Street questions? Because I got a bunch.
Since, you know, you were just kind of like making it into the movies, what was it like to get a call to do a film like that?
Incredible.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm going to tell a big secret. I'm 52 years old. Oh, well, I will be next week.
Yeah.
51.
Well, happy birthday.
Wow. I'm the first person who lies above their age.
Yes.
But you read...
But so
you
read, I grew up in the 80s. You know, I graduated in 1985. I was into Iron Maiden and Metallica, and I was into heavy metal culture, and I saw...
Not docking so much.
Well, no, I was way into Dawkins.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was super into Dawkins.
Okay.
Judas Priest, you know, we don't have that much time, you know.
No, I know. You'd be surprised how long.
So, I saw Nightmare 1 in the theater. I saw Texas Chainsaw at the drive-in.
Right.
I saw the first Friday the 13th. So I was into, you know, metal and horror culture and all that. And, you know, if you look at my Instagram, Rodney Eastman, just... That simple.
At Rodney Eastman.
Right. I have a picture posted on there from when I was 16 years old, and my hair is probably about as long as yours.
I saw that,
Look at that smile. Yeah. Look at that smile.
So,
loves that long hair.
So to get that audition, you know, and then to get the part was incredible, you know. And also I feel really blessed and really lucky that R.I.P. The creator of Nightmare on Elm Street,
Wes Craven,
right? That he made Nightmare on Elm Street, the first one, kind of stepped away, kind of, you know, sold the project to a New Line, and really wanted to save the franchise.
Right.
And came back to be really hands-on involved with part three.
He really was.
Oh, yeah. He was on set every single day.
Okay. I didn't know this.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Because I know he wrote a script, and Chuck Russell, the director, and Frank Darabont, the Academy Award winner, rewrote it. His was like time travel or something, and
yes, there were big differences.
Yeah.
But the original idea of Dream Warriors.
Right.
And kids that were disadvantaged.
Right.
Bullied.
Right.
Mentally ill.
It was way ahead of its time in that.
Mm-hmm. Right. That they would. And also, I feel like that's why Nightmare on Elm Street 3 is such a fan favorite.
It's the best one.
So lasting, because every one of the kids in that movie, everybody who watches that movie, even if you're not a horror fan, there's somebody in that movie that you can relate to.
Right.
Definitely.
And so just to be a fan of horror and to be on that set and to have a real piece in that movie, you know, have a real part of it, was super exciting.
But, I mean, the cast is amazing. You got Patricia Arquette, who won an Academy Award. And apparently you had a mad crush on her, according to the documentary. Now, you want to clear this one up?
I make it clearer?
Yes.
I was completely in love with her.
You went to Robert Englund, who plays Freddy himself, and said, "How do I get this girl?"
I don't remember that.
Okay.
But if it's online, it must be true.
It's in the documentary Never Sleep Alone.
Never Sleep Again?
Never Sleep Again, I'm sorry.
But, Mark, I think you're projecting.
Well, I'm in love with Patricia Arquette. I'm in love with Patricia Arquette, no, and if she's listening...
The Never Sleep Alone part.
Yes, but I always sleep alone. But Patricia Arquette, if you're listening, but you know who else? I mean, Jennifer Rubin, I met her last year. She's
incredible.
Still beautiful. Oh.
Incredible. And also, you know, she was such a Midwest... all-American girl, Heather Langenkamp.
Beautiful, too.
In that movie, you know, you look back in those movies, God, she's so gorgeous. But what I wanted to say was, you were asking me about...
Patricia Arquette.
No. Yeah. Well, yes, Patricia Arquette, yes. But, you know, very simply, I did have a crush on her. She was, how could you not?
Exactly.
Patricia Arquette, so beautiful. And so sweet and talented and kind.
And this is her first movie.
And her first movie and my first real movie. It was incredible. But what you were asking me earlier about Tiger Beat 16 magazine.
Right.
And how, weren't you so excited? And I told you there was no TMZ culture. There was no internet, nothing like that. So I got to tell you, Nightmare on Elm Street 3 was a top 10 grosser.
Yeah.
In the year it was released. Nightmare on Elm Street 4.
Even bigger.
Even bigger. Nightmare on Elm Street 4 was the highest grossing independent film of all time when it came out.
Right.
They got knocked off by Sex, Lies, and Videotape.
Right. Mm.
But there was pockets of celebrity culture.
But
not like celebrity culture like that. I didn't even know that I was in a top 10 grossing movie. Now, if an actor,
right.
if a 19-year-old actor
mm-hmm.
is a lead in a movie
right.
that's a top 10 grosser of the year.
Like the Spider-Man guy.
Right. He's got a publicist. He's got package deals.
Right.
He gets... It was a different time.
Right.
You know?
No, I'm saying you're going down. You're going to clubs. You're going.
No, I was not.
He's talking about action, buddy.
Action, buddy.
He's talking about action.
I'm saying you don't walk down the street and then the hot, beautiful women go, "Oh my God, it's Joey from Nightmare on Elm Street."
No, when I made Nightmare on Elm Street 3, I was still living in East LA. I had an amazing girlfriend.
Oh, okay. Well,
named Adriana Juana Aguilar.
Okay, good for her.
Did you get like the fan mail that we'd like write into?
Yeah, let's see.
Did that actually go to you, or did that go to somebody else?
No, I would get fan mail.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was lazy.
Because we had that little book, and we'd write little messages.
You wrote Rodney.
No, I didn't. No.
Okay.
but I have to say, I know I'm always a long talker. Sorry.
No, it's thoughtful answers.
that when it was happening. like at that time, horror movies were like the redheaded stepchild of the film industry.
Right.
They really were like one step above pornos.
Sure.
You know, in some way. You know, just like much like now you'll see Sam Jackson doing a credit card commercial. Mm-hmm. Back then, like there was a clear delineation.
Right.
You know, Academy Award nominated actors. Horror was way down on the line.
Right.
And nobody knew at that time. Everybody knew, oh, these movies are successful. People like them. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, how can you say this is an iconic franchise?
Yeah.
It was becoming that, but it wasn't as reinforced by culture as it is now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So when you got the script and you had, like, no lines, what did you think?
Well, that's going to be really easy to memorize, is what I thought.
And then you got the script for 4 and you had, like, 5 lines.
Then I was like, you bastards.
You wanted to be
the first one.
And they replaced Patricia Arquette with somebody else.
I'm my lawyers advised me not to even discuss that. So
yeah, no offense to the probably the best name I've ever heard in my life for an actor, Tuesday Night. But
Tuesday.
Yeah.
I remember her. I worked with her years ago.
Oh, okay, yeah. She was awesome. She replaced Patricia Arquette in Nightmare on Elm Street 4.
Oh, I didn't realize.
We'll have to watch it. I'm currently representing someone called Wednesday Morning.
Yes. Yeah. that's a good name too. But you know,
daughter.
But I can't if I may finish.
Please.
That now what there was several years, maybe even decades, where I was embarrassed that Nightmare on Elm Street was the thing that I was the most known for.
Really?
I've got almost 100 credits on my IMDb.
Right.
I've worked a bunch. And as time has gone by...
You're on Melrose Place.
That was a great show.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I got slapped by Heather Locklear.
Well, who hasn't?
Before she slapped her boyfriend.
Right.
But what I eventually came to realize, I started doing conventions,
right,
and I saw the love for this movie.
Right.
I saw how people were coming. Literally, people have come up to talk to me at conventions.
Right.
Grandmother, daughter,
right,
grandson.
There you go.
It's generational.
Right.
And now I feel like, now I feel so proud of being in those movies.
I mean,
and so lucky, right, because they've become so iconic.
Right.
You know, everyone, you could go all over the world. You could go to Indonesia and you go, and people go, yeah, Freddy Krueger.
Yeah.
Like people know.
How's that for a wet dream? Everybody knows it. Everybody knows.
Well, it's funny because when we were little, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have smartphones. So we had our imaginations.
Right.
And after seeing you with the waterbed scene, yeah, my friend's parents had a waterbed. And so we were the waterbed inspectors to make sure no one was in there. We demanded to go look. And
no naked women in the waterbed. But yeah. By the way, John, since you haven't seen these movies, I don't want to spoil it, but yeah, Rodney's weakness, that Freddy Krueger, his weakness is horniness, and Freddy Krueger exploits that.
And not much has changed.
In Nightmare 3, a nurse strips, so this is what I want to get to. Strips, they start kissing. It turns out he's kissing Freddy. Mm-hmm. Freddy takes his tongue, puts it on 4 tongues, straps him to a bed. Now, you're strapped to a bed, but they filmed it with you vertically.
That's right.
Why?
Roy Wagner. Because the Roy Wagner, the director of photography,
mm-hmm,
had a whole vision for it. You know, again, that also no CGI,
right,
back then.
Right.
And just the...
So what were the tongues made out of?
Latex.
Oh, okay.
Right. So there was a whole... just the way the sequence was planned out, they wanted to pull back from the bed as though they were moving vertically.
Right.
But they didn't have the technology, even the camera rigs, to do it back then.
So they
built a room completely flipped at a 90-degree angle on its side so they could set up a crane and just pull straight back. And then when you saw it on screen, it looked like they were,
right,
you know, lifting up from me.
And you passed out because it's the crucifix position.
Those tongues were made of latex, but they had metal brackets on them
right,
that were digging into my wrist, and and I was probably suspended about 25 feet in the air.
Right.
And it, you know, movie sets are notoriously overheated.
Sure.
So it was probably about, you know, 90 degrees
right.
on set. And you know, that's when they...
So when you wake up, what do you think? You're like, you know, enough
well,
of that.
I'm, you know, I fainted once.
Right.
You know, and they pulled me down and then, you know, realized...
Or did they have Lawrence Fishburne and Robert Englund?
That's when you were... I got to say, when probably the most amazing moment for me on the set of Nightmare on Elm Street was when I walked onto set and I saw Cool from Apocalypse Now, Lawrence Fishburne. I was a young movie fan, and I was such a fan of that movie.
Yeah. And see, that's the guy I would have asked how to get Patricia Arquette, not Robert Englund.
And I really don't think that, I mean, you're the researcher, I haven't checked, but I don't think he had even done a movie since Apocalypse Now.
And, well, when I have Lawrence Fishburne in here, I'll scour his IMDb page.
But yeah, I was just so amazed, and he was incredible.
But you could tell, like, this dude knows what he's doing.
Well, I knew he knew what he was doing. I'd watched Apocalypse Now at least 10 times
right.
by that time.
Right.
Came out in, what, 79?
You know? So how did you meet John? And I'm sorry that we keep, like, we're talking to Rodney. I'm ignoring Academy Award nominee John Hawks here.
Bother me,
how did you guys meet?
Rodney and I met playing half-brothers on a movie called Sand.
That's not how we met.
How did you meet Rodney?
No, we met, you're right, Rodney. We met earlier than that, I guess. We met, but go ahead, yeah.
We first met on a TV show.
Dangerous Minds.
Dangerous Minds.
We didn't have scenes together, but we met at the read-through.
So this spinoff of the Michelle Pfeiffer movie?
It was.
Okay.
It was.
Okay, I remember.
TV series for
that.
A couple of years it was on, I think.
Yeah.
And I don't think we met at the table read. I think we met...
I remember just seeing you. But
oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was out of it back then.
Yep.
So,
yeah. <That's all right.
laughs> True story.
Yeah.
And then what, we crossed paths on set?
Did we?
I believe so.
Just said hello, maybe?
Yeah. Now, we had no scenes together.
Right.
But we were on the same TV show.
Exactly.
That's where we first met. And then...
We started auditioning for that movie, Sand, out in Malibu.
That's right.
And that's when I first kind of really remembered talking to you. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting on the parking lot and just being amazed at how old you said you were, because I thought you were probably younger.
Mm-hmm.
And then we chatted a while and smoked a couple of cigs, and Hope said, you know, we'd auditioned with a bunch of other people and in all kinds of different groups. And I remember just thinking, I hope we said, you know, I hope you get it. I hope you get it. And we both got it. And then we were joined at the hip for that movie, and then did like a couple things like randomly again, partnered up, just like we did Nash Bridges television show within a year later, and so I feel like something else. Kept working.
Within 18 months we were on those three jobs.
That's right, within
together.
A year and a half, which is crazy. And then you like music, I like music, you know, I like music.
That's
yeah, I make music, I make music. And so Rodney played me a demo of a song of his that was really great, and he played all the instruments on it. He played it in the makeup trailer. I thought it was really good and wanted to collaborate with him. And so we got together and started playing music. We played a house party together that was a gig of mine that he joined me on. And then, I guess in 2003, we started to really record and make a band. Yeah.
And why is the Rodney and John bands? Not the John and Rodney bands.
It just sounds better for one.
Da, well, da, it sounds da, better, Rodney. Sure,
da 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 da, just rhythmically.
No. Oh, okay,
da,
oh,
da,
got
da,
it.
Da, instead of da 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 da, not as interesting to me.
And yeah, we had a band called King Straggler.
King Straggler. I was just
and that band ended, and we didn't play music probably for 5 years together.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And that band we'd been in was intense. You know, we'd played Sundance, we played South by Southwest, we toured a couple of times. We had labels sniffing us up during that, and it was an intense experience. And then we didn't play for a while.
Yeah. And
because you're busy working actors.
Yeah, partly that.
Yeah,
just life. Yeah.
I mean, John and I have been. We did the.
Yeah, you want to come over and write some songs? No, I'm going to the Oscars. I'll be.
It's not so much that it's.
I'm kidding.
It's like any friendship. I mean, we joke on stage. Yeah. You know, we do introductions and.
Well, that's what I was going to say when I saw you guys. Frank Zappa famously said, "Does humor belong in music?" Mm. And it definitely does with your music. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of satire. You haven't heard him sing, and you will shortly. It's almost been an hour. I can't even believe it. But wow. The conversation. A terrific band, and we're gonna hear one or maybe two songs, whatever you guys want to do, three, four, five, whatever you want to do.
Two songs.
But I really enjoyed. Because and here's the thing. Now you both kind of came up, and from what I understand, what I've read, kind of in the punk era. Inspired by punk, but your music is more a country folk sort of thing, right?
Maybe. I mean, Gig Strangler used to be more in the country folk, and we'll still pull that out. It's just music, really, I think. And Rodney, I feel like, if I'm not incorrect, was more metal when you were a kid growing up.
Right.
When you were a young teenager and stuff like that. And
classic rock.
And, yeah. You know. Yeah, and I liked classic rock and then kind of discovered punk rock in 1979 when I was living in Austin, Texas, and started playing in bands in 1982. And so... was, you know, early on into it, but I think it's less about, punk was never about a mohawk or a distorted guitar or being loud. It was always, to me, more of a people who had no money, which right. none of us did, who were who really cared deeply about what they were doing, and with the resources they had, they were going to do their best and not fuck people over and not, you know, and be just decent to those around them. And doesn't sound like punk, but that's what it was to me.
Sure.
So any kind of music, it didn't have to be a certain kind of music. It felt punk rock to me, from Philip Glass to the Roaches to whoever felt like punk rock, because they were doing things that were so different from what you'd hear on popular radio.
Right.
So, I loved, as Rodney has, we've exposed each other to a lot of good music over the years. I've just always had music in my brain and wanted to play music, even though I was too shy to, and I think Rodney's the same.
Yeah, and you were paying attention, because 40 minutes ago he was saying all the bands they liked and they're all metal bands, so mm-hmm. I didn't even
I've always liked all kinds of music, and sure. and I think that you know, like I said, that we took a real break from playing music,
right.
And maybe at that point in time we kind of drifted apart, even as friends.
Mm-hmm.
But John and I have known each other
22
years.
Yeah,
and like it's like marriage. It's like any relationship.
Sure.
Nothing is all ice cream and cotton candy right. all the way through.
Right.
You know, and I feel like our triumphs together as friends, our closeness that mm-hmm. we've achieved, and also times in life when we hated each other mm-hmm. has made our... friendship and our music all the more richer.
Right.
I really think that. And I would say, you know, aside from heavy metal, also very influenced by Velvet Underground, Lou
sure.
Reed,
yeah.
David Bowie. And I think even in the stuff that we did that was more sort of country flavored, you could still hear those influences in it. And I feel like they've come out a little bit more now.
Yeah.
And
Lou Reed especially, yes.
And we like to say, you know, now this band is more art band than jug band.
Sure.
You know. Mm. And speaking of which, we have a show coming up.
Yes, you
next
do.
Week.
I have the flyer right here.
There you go.
That's it's going to be comedy. Is it two shows?
We have two shows.
Two shows coming up.
Okay, so we've got the show on next Thursday, which is your birthday show.
It is my birthday show.
And we're going to have comedy, and then Rodney and John. That's at the 5-Star Bar downtown.
That is.
That is on the 18th, is that correct?
The 18th.
Okay, good.
Today.
I'll be there.
And yeah. And also,
Mark. I'm actually going to come right after the show, too, yeah.
And also, Mark, you have only seen John and I perform as a duo with our amazing violin player, Corey Simeone.
Who's great, yeah.
But this show is going to be our real rock show with the full band, with our incredible drummer Danny Thompson, who has played with us, lucky him.
Many years.
But but he was also, you know, again, rest in peace. He was
Scott Weiland.
Scott Weiland's drummer right up until
kind of
the
day
he died.
Oh, wow. He was in Walkabouts then.
And he sure is. And now he's on the road with
Alan Parsons.
Alan Parsons.
Yeah. Well, that's not too shabby. Nope.
And Mike Lerman, our incredible bass player, and Corey Simeone. So they'll all be joining us, and you're going to see a much sort of
different real rock show. This is
is a rock show.
Rodney and John Go Electric.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I can't wait. This is going to be great. John, because we're at like 64 minutes. I got two questions to ask you, and then I want to hear some music. Why do all actors want to be musicians? Eddie Murphy, Billy Bob Thornton. Mm-hmm. I can name Jared Leto,
Keanu Reeves,
mm-hmm. Zooey Deschanel. I mean, just Taylor Momsen. What is it about the actors that they and you guys are good? I mean, and actually, I'm trying to think of an actor that's really not that good.
Yeah, well, Spin Magazine a few summers back, maybe 10 years ago, and I did an actor band expose, and we were luckily highly rated throughout the article because they were mean to people, and I understand. I understand. It's like, how much attention do you need, I think people may say, but for me, music's never been about money. Acting hadn't really been either. They just started to pay me at some point for doing the same thing I've been doing for 10 years for free. But I think that it's all telling a story on some level. And right. I think that if you're attracted to telling stories or hearing stories, you're going to be attracted to a lot of different things. Sure. So to me, it all goes together, and a lot of art has the same kind of rules. It's just as far as what I personally enjoy. So, if I walk into an art museum, I walk out a better actor. If I go see a dance performance, I walk out a better actor. If I read a novel, I end up a better musician. If I write a song, I end up whatever. I think they all kind of literally go together. But the funny thing to me is it's pretty cool. No one had any issue when musicians want to act. That's no problem. But if an actor wants to play music, it's as though you're like a common thief or a murderer or something. You're an anathema. It used to be that way. Nobody kind of cares anymore because everybody's got their own show and whatever.
Yeah.
But
I've seen 50 Cent act. I just saw Iggy Pop play a zombie.
Yeah, but nobody's going to go. No one's going to go way out of their way and harass them for it. What I'm saying. Whereas 10, 15 years ago, if an actor wanted to play music, it was thought of as. But I've been playing music since 1980 in bands since 1982. Right. And the first exposure I ever got outside of the region I was in for any art was for a band I was in called Meat Joy in 1982, written up in England. So, long before I was ever getting into the press, if you will, as an actor, I was there as a musician. So.
All right. Well, there you go.
I was playing backyard parties in East L.A. when I was 16 years old.
Playing drums?
Playing drums way before I ever, decided to even try to be an actor.
Well, that's great. Well,
and also, I just got to say, sorry to be a plug whore, but, I have not been as active as I should be in my acting career because I'm really trying to move up the financial entertainment ladder. I started as an actor and then I went to the far more lucrative musician route, and now I've jumped right to the top in the stand-up comedy world.
Right.
Everyone knows the immense riches that are there for the taking.
By the way, the next step is janitor, by the way,
Well, then, and below that's poetry, I think, really. If you were,
Well, that's next.
As far as money making.
That's next for me, John. Yeah, that's right. I can that's one can only money. One can only dream.
The big money is always in poetry.
But I saw you do some stand-up, and you were inexperienced, but you were funny. And that's more than I could say for a lot of people.
Thank you.
I think
when
it comes with comedians, too, with age, you kind of have a sense of humor about life and what you lived through.
Which is interesting because a lot of the clubs won't book anybody over 30.
Yeah. But, and just, wait, can,
which is ridiculous.
We've got more hyping.
I have to hype. Making a joke about it.
I'm not.
I have been building a comedy show at Five Star Bar. With my girlfriend Angela Manzan,
who we've had on the show, who's terrific,
right? And you are a regular there, and you're very funny. You hosted our last show, Mark,
right?
And I have to say, making a joke about the financial gains, they are not there, but it's been one of the most gratifying experiences that I've had in show business. It's been...
Well, the Five Star Bar is a great venue. They're getting more and more people. On the 14th, next Thursday...
18th.
18th, excuse me. JR Redwater, who we've had on the show, is going to be on. He's great. We got Jackson Banks, who we got to have on the show. He's fantastic.
Incredible.
Very funny. Brooklyn Jones.
Incredible.
Troy Dillinger.
One of our best lineups ever. Yeah.
It's terrific. And I'm even going to come in and hopefully do a set.
And I have to say two things.
You are going to be on the show.
And John, when you were there... You were there supporting all the comedians. You even moved the pool table. You're just...
I did what I can, man. But I know we're out of time, so we'll talk. We'll just do everything faster. Yeah. We're also playing the 20th at Fado Do.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Indeed. In the evening. Do they find us, Rodney? Is it Rodney and John at Facebook?
Rodney and John.
With
on
the ampersand
Facebook?
Rather than AND.
They won't let you use an ampersand in the title.
Forget about it.
Rodney and John
on Facebook.
But you're on Instagram at Rodney and John.
Right. Rodney and John. Also, just Rodney Eastman.
Right.
On Facebook.
Sure.
Also on Facebook, if you want to, for the upcoming comedy shows, Smarties and Dummies.
Smarties and Dummies.
On Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's Rodney and John on Facebook. But yeah, we've got a lot of good stuff coming up. Do you want to tell them?
That was one thing. Here's the second thing.
Please.
Real quickly, Rodney and I.
Most importantly.
Rodney and I and a gentleman named Whammo, out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The three of us wrote a rock and roll play called "Where's Cherry," and we did a couple of workshops of it over the last year, and we're hoping this fall to really mount "Where's Cherry" in earnest. So
Rodney was telling me about that.
It a full production. Mm-hmm. So keep an eye out for "Where's Cherry," and when you hear these songs, we'll play one from a record we got coming up, and the other song that Rodney will sing will be from the show "Where's Cherry."
That's great.
Cool.
First off, please come back and bring Whammo. I gotta meet a guy named Whammo.
You and Whammo you may cancel each other out. Yeah. It's one of those things where two people have the same kind of intensity. It's like Bukowski never wanted to go to a party where there's another drunken writer. It's like we'll cancel each other out. No one will even know anyone's there.
One last question, because I don't know the next time we'll have an Oscar nominee in here.
No, but we'll come back for "Where's Cherry."
Absolutely.
Hopefully in October.
Yeah. But what was in the gift bag?
Which one? The Academy gift bag?
Yeah.
I had no idea. You know, I gave that stuff away, or, you know, it wasn't a car in the bag. There was no car. I looked all over, but there was no car in the bag. One thing that you do get as an Academy Award nominee, and this is no bullshit, you get a really large, cheaply made gray sweatshirt that's like extra, extra large, and it says Academy Award nominee on it.
No, are you serious?
No, they've been doing this for many years, apparently. I'm not sure. Whoever makes the sweatshirt, I apologize if we're poking fun at it, but I don't know where that is either. But I haven't worn it out to clubs.
Pajamas, though. It's like cozy.
I think they gave you Peter Ustinov's old sweatshirt.
I don't know, but everyone gets the same size. They don't even ask what size you want.
The bigger, the better.
Yeah, if he could find it, maybe he'll give it to you, Mark.
I would be honored. But anyway, I can't wait to hear these songs. By the way, Hannah, you know, we were goofing on the actors making music. These guys are good. Wait till you hear this.
Well, and we're actors making music. We'll see what goes.
I've heard you guys are good. And anyway, we're gonna have Rodney and John sing.
Let's just play for a minute.
Let's just see what happens. What? Can I see?
Oh, okay. One. 3, 4. There is no history. There is no mystery. There is no innocence. Just hallowed decadence. There is no privacy.
live for all to see. Everyone knows everything all the time. There is no common good. It's all misunderstood. There is no wild land.
That last one's called Wild Land. Wild Land. Two words if you want them together, either one. And this one's called No Place.
No Place. Father, please help us. Come alone, don't bring no one. Leave home St. Peter and Jesus Christ your son. Cause this ain't no place for children. This den of thieves and the unforgiven. But the world's on fire, so I just close my eyes and I wish I could disappear. But I only feel that way when she's not here. Awful tired, and I heard you lost your way. Spread your wings, it's time you flew on. This ain't no place for a woman. Cause the men who lie wait with hungry eyes at the bottom of your stair. But I promise I'll chase them off when I get there. Father, forgive us. We overlooked the price. Rules of engagement left us all as cool as ice. So let's have a drink and take cover. 'Cause this ain't no place for lovers. Enjoy the show. I guess we'll never know if we're ready for all of this. It's an easy thought for most to dismiss. For we're laid to rest, hear our last request. Love thy brothers and sisters too.
Warts and all.
Yeah, warts and all.
Cool.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Nice work, Ronnie.
Thank you, guys.